This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Now that the fighting has stopped, we wanted to check back in with some of the people we turned to over the past few weeks to help us understand and interpret the war. First, we called Fred Halliday. Halliday is a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics and the author of books and articles on the Middle East and the Cold War. We spoke with him last week about the Soviet Union's attempt to broker a peace settlement with Iraq. Today we asked Halliday about Saddam Hussein's future in Iraq.
Saddam Hussein may have enough power left to survive. He's obviously been weakened by the war militarily. He's lost most of his armored divisions, his air force, his navy, but he retains several hundred thousand men under arms in the north and center of the country. He retains his three security forces. He retains the apparatus of the party, and effective political opposition to him within the country is still punishable with death. Moreover, he will turn the Allied attack on Iraq to political advantage. I don't know how successful it will be. That depends on what happens in the longer run. But he will say, we stood up for more than 5 weeks to the armies of imperialism. We have told the West to go to hell, as no Arab leader has done in this century. And we have championed the cause of Iraqi steadfastness, which is an important virtue in that part of the world. And for those who believe him, the cause of Palestine. So he's not down and out. And if you see how difficult it's been for other dictatorial leaders to be ousted, even when they've made great mistakes, then Saddam is in with a chance. But of course, it's not just the war itself, but the policies which the states around Iraq, all of them around Iraq, will pursue afterwards, which will seek to undermine him.
He really did not do a very good job militarily in this war. Do you think his own military would like to overthrow him, or other people close to him in power? Do you think they would like to overthrow him, and do you think that they will?
Well, Saddam is heartily disliked by most Iraqis. I've no doubt about that, and that's been the case for many years. And many of them will blame him for this war and for what he's brought on them, and the very inept way he's handled not just the war, but the diplomacy. And in some ways, the diplomacy is even more a disaster because he could have avoided it at several times. He could have saved everything and got out of Kuwait, not just up to the 16th of January when the fighting started, but even afterwards. He mistimed everything. The military are organized by the party and by the party leadership, as in a communist country. There never was a coup in a communist country, except perhaps to General Jaruzelski in Poland in 81, and even he did it with the agreement of the party. So it would be difficult for the military to act, but there must be people who will oppose him, and they will know what people in the population are saying. So there is a reasonable probability that at some point between now and, say, the next 2 years, Saddam will be overthrown, but it's not inevitable. And he knows that as well as anybody and will take the necessary precaution.
It seems like it was one of the unstated goals of the coalition forces to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Do you think that they will let him stay in power, after the ceasefire?
Well, I don't think it was so much an unstated goal to get rid of Saddam. It was a logical conclusion of the stated goal. The stated goal was to ensure stability in the Gulf and to reintegrate Iraq into a more calculable and a more reasonable set of regional relationships, particularly vis-a-vis other Arabs. And let's not forget, Saddam's first and last quarrels with other Arabs, not with Israel, not with Iran, not with Turkey, and certainly not with the United States. So once that was proclaimed by Bush on the night of the 16th of January, the removal of Saddam and his whole regime, or the people around him, was a necessary conclusion. However, it's not within the United Nations mandate. It would involve enormous extra military and political risks within Iraq and outside. And one only has to see how difficult it's been to unseat other rulers for this to be something that must be treated with caution. After all, the Russians tried for many years to get rid of Tito. They didn't succeed. The United States tried to get rid of Noriega. They finally had to go in, tried to get rid of Gaddafi. He's still there. They've tried to get rid of Castro. The mechanics of getting rid of a country, even if you blockade it, if you undermine it, are quite difficult, let alone the patriotic backlash. So yes, getting rid of Saddam is a precondition for meeting one of Bush's war goals. But the United States is not prepared, and wisely so, not prepared to pay the price that would be involved in doing so. However, the removal of Saddam is not just what George Bush would like to see. It's what most people in the Arab world would like to see, those in the government anyway, in Egypt and Syria and Saudi Arabia. They want to get rid of Saddam. So do the Turks, and so, in my view, do most Iraqis. So it's not a question of America versus Saddam, but it's a question of a well-entrenched dictator against a wide range of enemies. And he will bob and weave as best he can to stay in power and stay in this world, for that matter.
So you think he's in for a while?
I'm not sure. and it'll only be clear once the dust has settled. We don't know how many Iraqis have been killed. Is it 2,000? Is it 20,000? Is it 100,000? We just don't know. We don't know how much of Iraqi territory is being occupied. We don't know whether the city of Basra is under foreign occupation or not yet. So how many Iraqis are under foreign rule? Until that is clear, until the extent of the defeat is clear, and it isn't clear yet, it simply is impossible to tell. Secondly, one will have to wait a week or two to see how the regime in Iraq reacts, whether they play down Saddam's role, whether his pictures start coming down, whether it's a tactical retreat or whether it's a sincere one. There's a lot that has to be looked at for a week or two, and then one can see. But all I can say is the pressures on him are great, but he's survived. The fox, as the Arabs call him, the fox has slipped the net again, as he did in the war with Iran, and he may live to fight another day. It's possible. I don't think it's inevitable that he will fall.
What do you think of the coalition force's greatest gain in this war, politically?
Well, all wars are fought on at least two fronts. They're fought against the enemy, and then they're fought to improve their position vis-a-vis their allies. If you remember in the Second World War, the United States and the Soviet Union fought Germany and Japan, but they also improved their position vis-a-vis other countries, the United States vis-a-vis Britain and France and the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe. So the gains of the United States and of Arab countries in this war must be seen in both perspectives. Clearly, Iraq has been dealt a very serious blow and will not for many years, more than 10 years, I think, be a serious military threat to anyone. And let's not forget the people who are most pleased about that are not the Kuwaitis or the Saudis or George Bush, but the Iranians. They were the ones who suffered most from Saddam. So Iran will feel much more secure, and so will the other neighbors of Iraq. That's number one. Number two, I think the war was in many ways an Arab civil war, the first we've seen in modern times, the first time Arab armies have really fought each other. And clearly the Arab states that fought with the coalition or played a token role, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Kuwait, will benefit in terms of the divisions of the Arab world. And the losers, we know who they are. They're the Jordanians, the Yemenis, the PLO, all of whom have legitimate grievances against the coalition states. But those legitimate grievances have been drowned now in this military triumph. The longer-term question is, well, how does it affect the United States' relations with other members of the coalition? With Germany and Japan, with the whole demand for greater financial support, may end up that the United States won't make much money out of this, and even if it does cost them the $20 billion that it's been said to cost them, it's very small compared to the $500 or more billion which the savings and loans disaster is going to cost the United States government. Moreover, the relations of the United States and the Soviet Union have been altered. I think the United States has notched up an even greater degree of advantage over the Soviet Union because it's demonstrated the superiority of its military equipment, which will not be lost on the Soviet military and on Soviet allies the world round, and also because it simply rebuffed the Soviet peace offers. So war is about altering relations between the victor powers as much as it's altering relations between the victors and the vanquished, and the United States will benefit from that latter relationship, the change between the various victors, as much as between itself and the vanquished. In fact, I think most people in the United States are much more concerned about their relations with Japan and Germany and the Soviet Union, all of whom are on the same side, than they are about Iraq, a country about whom I doubt if they care or know very much.
Are there certain pitfalls within the victory for the victors?
Well, wars don't solve anything, but they provide an opportunity to address certain problems. There are several pitfalls, and I am not at all sure that they will be addressed. The first is the pitfall of falling back into the bad old ways of the Persian Gulf. By that, I mean two things. One is accepting the status quo in terms of dictatorial governments, both Iraq, whom the West supported for many years. I think most Iraqis blame the United States for supporting Saddam rather more than they blame the United States for dropping bombs on him, but also the coalition states, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Now, in human rights terms, there is no comparability between Kuwait and Saudi Arabia on the one hand and Iraq on the other. Iraq has a much, many times worse human rights record. But in Saudi Arabia, no one has a vote. There is no freedom of expression. Women aren't even allowed to drive cars. It is a highly authoritarian, religiously and genderedly discriminatory society. Kuwait has a better record, has a decent constitution, but the ruling al-Sabah family, who are in the main corrupt and inept, they could have avoided this conflict altogether. They are seeking to prevent the restoration of democracy. So the issue of democracy in that area is one that has been avoided and needs to be addressed. As Arabs say, why should the United States demand democracy in Latin America and Eastern Europe and not do the same in the Middle East? Good question.
Can I ask how you're feeling today on the first day of what appears to be a military victory?
Well, I woke up unusually early at 6 o'clock to hear that the ceasefire had come into play, and I was delighted to hear it. I feel a sense of relief that the war is over. I worry greatly about how many Iraqis were killed. I hope, as I've hoped for many years, it is my abiding sentiment in this whole thing that Saddam Hussein is driven out of power by his own people. And I hope, not with great optimism, that the victorious powers will learn something politically from this war to which they contributed by building up Saddam over the years, by mistakenly refusing to negotiate with Iraq before the war. And I would say that some of Iraq's criticisms of Kuwait were valid. It doesn't justify the Iraq invasion of Kuwait. But I wonder about what's happening. I wonder both about how many Iraqis have been killed, and I wonder what's happening in Kuwait, in particular what's happening to the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Kuwait, about whom many people are fearful, and about whom, as of now, 4:30 or 5 o'clock London time, there is no news, and none of the correspondents in Kuwait seem to have made it their business to find out what's happening to them.
You said that you hope the Iraqis are able to drive Saddam Hussein from power. How would they be able to do that?
Well, there are three ways in which Saddam could go from power. The first, which is highly improbable, is to do what Nasser did, and that is to make a speech to the people and offer to resign. We remember the people sincerely poured into the streets to ask Nasser to stay. But I doubt, and I doubt very much, whether Saddam would offer to resign, because he knew the people wouldn't pour into the streets. But that is one way, and let's just mention it in order to exclude it. The second way is for some kind of military or armed action to overthrow him by the armed forces. And the third is for some broader popular and armed uprising to occur, both in the Arab cities and in the Kurdish mountains. The last is improbable, given the balance of forces within the country, but there is a long history of armed uprising in Iraq, particularly by the Kurds and their left-wing allies. And it remains to be seen what happens. I think that if Saddam can weather the next week or two, then it'll be some time before he's overthrown, and I'm not confident he ever will. He's only in his 50s. He might be there in 25 years' time. Who knows? But it's certainly his grip on power will be weakened. And if the full extent of his mishandling of the crisis becomes evident, then the chances of a political improvement in Iraq are certainly there. And my hope throughout this crisis has been, if nothing else, that it will unseat this man, who is, by any standards, one of the most dreadful dictators of the late 20th century. And let us not forget that the people who've suffered most from Saddam Hussein have not been the Kuwaitis or even the Iranians, but have been the long-suffering people of Iraq itself, who've had him in power for 22 and a half years.
Fred Halliday is a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics. He spoke to us from London. This is Fresh Air.